very gracious introduction, and I'm so inspired by your story. So I was born as a stateless person in Rakhine State, in Arakan, Burma, Myanmar. And my four older siblings, my two parents, my mom and my dad, we had to flee in the 90s, where there were violence against the Rohingya. We had to flee due to several reasons, and one of them was being stateless, being undocumented, and not having any legal protection in our own country. So we fled and we ended up in Malaysia, in Sabah, a very small island. And I was so happy to hear the HC speak about host communities and the importance of inclusion, which I'll touch base a little bit later. So let's talk about why Rohingya remain stateless until today and why I was born as a stateless person. So in 1982, the military junta, the main perpetrator against the Rohingya, introduced the Citizenship Law Act, essentially removing and wiping Rohingya citizenship away from us, which led to Rohingya statelessness till today, and we remain the largest stateless community in the world. It's also important and essential to remember that prior to 1982, exclusionary practices and laws were already in place in Rakhine State to make sure that Rohingya was seen as outsiders, to ensure that Rohingya was seen as migrants to a homeland that's been ours for many, many generations, a homeland where our great-great-grandparents built our homes and our mosques and our villages. So that groundwork was already in place to ensure that they received domestic support when the 1982 Citizenship Law Act was already in place. So that made us stateless. We ended up in Malaysia.
How did you get to Malaysia? Tell us a bit. How old were you?
I was just a baby when I ended up in Malaysia. But I lived there for the first 8 years and a half of my life.
And this was your whole family that went, you travelled as, and you became refugees the minute you landed.
Yes, so we became refugees the minute we ended up in Malaysia. We walked through the Southeast Asian jungles. We took every boat possible. We relied on the generosity of host communities, and we were constantly living in fear in Malaysia. There were always police railing out refugees in the region, and I spent a very long time hiding. My mother, a very intelligent Rohingya woman, ensured that we all had different hiding spots. She drilled that into us. Her hiding spot was in the wardrobe. My hiding spot was in the jungles of Sabah, and she made friends with an indigenous Tausug Filipino lady that was also displaced, and she also hid in the jungles, and she was the person that I went to when the police raids were extremely concerning for my mother. And back to your question on how I retained citizenship was in 2003, the Australian government granted my family and I asylum, and today I hold an Australian passport, which I'm very grateful for, but my people and I still remain non-citizens of our ancestral homeland.
So it's a conflicted space that you're in, because now your whole life's work is advocacy for this, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I'll touch base on that a little bit later after we hear from the incredible Nasizi.
Well, Nasizi, I want you to share with everybody what you've got in your hand and tell us why you've brought it on.